Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, we're going to learn about the messy truth from the amazing Allie Webb, founder of Drybar. I know you guys have got to hear this interview. Allie, I'm so thrilled to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And I want to just give a little blurb of your bio because maybe not everybody knows how amazing you are, but if you've never heard of Drybar, you must have heard of Drybar. This is a beautiful chain all around the country. She's redefined the beauty industry with her really unique vision and innovative approach. She's started as a professional stylist and evolved into this really groundbreaking venture called Drybar in 2010 and grew into more than 100 locations. She's like Forbes and Fortune 440 under 40, Marie Claire's most influential women. And this is her second book. She's actually written another book, Drybar Guide to Good Hair for All. And with the launching of this book, The Messy Truth, she's really diving into her journey as an entrepreneur. And basically, life is messy. So tell me a little bit about what is your book about, Allie, The Messy Truth?
You know, it's really my whole journey of building and growing and scaling and selling Drybar and, all the ups and downs. And, as somebody who didn't go to college and doesn't have like a pedigree per se in building a business of this size and magnitude that Drybar became, I really had to learn so much along the way. And I feel like I got such an education building this brand. And I've just felt so compelled in the last few years to give back all of that and share, my truth, my journey, which also, had a lot of, unfortunate things happen, like, in the interim of growing this business over the last, 10 years I was in it. And, from my divorce from my first husband, who's also my business partner and creative genius behind Drybar, and my son going off the rails and going into rehab, and just, me spiraling into a bit of a depression and trying to like keep it all together, and the juxtaposition of the massive success of the business and then, my own personal stuff going on. And so it's all of that. And I think I felt really compelled to share the personal side alongside, the business side, because they just go so hand in hand. And I feel like we don't talk about that enough. It's like we all understandably, and I'm guilty of this too, show the best parts and not the messy parts. And I feel like, as someone who's had a little bit of success and has, done some great things, and I'm really proud of, I wanted to show, the kind of the underbelly of being an entrepreneur and just being a human. I mean, no matter what you're doing with your life, chances are there's an area at some point or another where things get really, really hard and you're trying to balance a lot. And, so this book is really just my journey through all of that.
That's amazing. I mean, just the process of growing from one location into 100 locations is incredibly intense. What made you decide to scale up? Did you just decide that you were so successful in one or two locations that you just needed to multiply and become a
Well, it
profit
was the demand.
potentially?
I mean, yeah, it was like, it was the demand was crazy and through the roof. And it was 150 actually. But I mean, which, it's 50 is significant, because it's so much work to get these, it was so much work to get the stores open. And it really was, it was that we had struck a chord with women. And this affordable luxury is what we created, at a price that women were never able to access before, because and the reason it all started and happened was because I had a mobile blowout business. I've been a professional hairstylist for gosh, 20 years now. When I was in my early 20s, I started doing hair, and because I have naturally curly hair, and I was always so driven to figure out how to blow out my own hair. But I started a mobile blowout business when my kids were about 2 and 4, and I had just moved to LA, and I didn't really know anybody. And I found myself very immersed in like the mommy community because I had little kids. And I was, after being a stay-at-home mom for three or four years, which I loved and felt so grateful for, I just got the itch to get back out there and do something for myself. And that's when I started my mobile business, which, you know, I was only charging $40. And I think I felt like I didn't want to charge a lot because I wanted to be busy, you know, and I felt like at an affordable price point, I could do this pretty regularly. And so I was charging $40 going, you know, with my duffel bag.
Driving in LA somewhere, just to drive. I would charge $40 just to drive anywhere. But you did everything, the drive, the blowout, the everything for $40.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, and I think I wasn't like, it wasn't about making money so much. And I did, you know, it was like between like LA, Brentwood, I mean, Santa Monica, Brentwood, Palisades. That was kind of, I lived in Santa Monica at the time, you know, and no, I don't think I actually made any money, but you know, I never chased the money, you know, and I wasn't looking to make a lot of money. My husband had my ex-husband had a good job. He was a creative director at an advertising agency. And I wanted to make a little bit of money, but I more wanted to just get out of the house and do something for myself. And I was looking for fulfillment more than anything. And that business would obviously end up leading to Drybar because there was, you know, coming to someone's house for $40 was, you know, to your shop was unheard of, you know, I mean, that was crazy, but it, you know, it would eventually lead to me being so busy that I was like, I can't sustain this amount of the business that was coming in. So that's what, you know, led me to decide to, you know, open a brick and mortar. Instead of me going to them, they come to me, which is that was it. You know, it was going to be my one little shop. And my brother, who's my business partner, Michael Landau, he had made some money when he worked for Yahoo a million years ago. He was one of like the first 100 employees at Yahoo. And he was willing to put up the money. And he said, you know, I'll give you sweat equity, which at the time I didn't know what sweat equity even was. And I just thought it sounded amazing, you know, and we started this business, you know, with like, my kids were 3 and 5. And I was like, you know, I'll pick up my kids after school and head home and that'll be that, you know, and I never would have imagined it. None of us would have imagined it would turn into what it did. But after we opened that first location, to get back to your original question, it, you know, it was just through the roof, the demand, because we were charging $35. The price has gone up since, but we started out of the gates at $35. And that was something that, you know, a lot of women could do, you know, and of course, like we had, you know, what we called bar flies, and because everything is in the bar theme, you know, women that were coming like, you know, 3 times a week, women started telling me they weren't washing their hair anymore. And, you know, the press was off the charts because it was such a new concept that we were like, we got to keep opening more stores. And so 6 months later, we opened the second store and then the third and fourth. And it was like, we just had to keep going because everybody loved it. And this had resonated deeply with women. And so,
yeah. So you found your niche. Yeah. You saw the demand, you found the niche, and you put out a quality product and like, I think a very repeatable experience where you can go anywhere in the country and get the same feel and experience and results. So that's so important too, because consistency, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was probably the biggest struggle of the whole thing was the consistency, because I felt so strongly about that. And I, you know, even before we developed our own product line, which would go on to be incredibly successful. I, even from the very beginning, day one, I provided all the blow dryers, all the products, everything for the stylists, and not all stylists loved that, but I wanted a cohesiveness, like, you know, aesthetically, I wanted it to look like no matter whose chair you sat in, you were going to have a very similar experience. And if one person had a red blow dryer, one person had a blue one, and it was just like the way it was going to look and feel, you know, I just didn't like that. So I was like, well, this is what I'm going to do, you know, and the mirrors that are behind the stations were also from my mobile blowout business, because I was doing clients like in their living room or kitchen, rarely in their personal bathroom. So there was not a mirror in front of us. And that was such a freeing experience as a hairstylist to not be micromanaged by a client and for the client to not have the stress of staring at themselves and trying to micromanage for 45 minutes. And so that was such an interesting learning and aha. And, you know, and after I was done with the blowout, the client would like run over to a mirror and I'd hear this big squeal of delight and they loved it. And so it was like that moment that I was like, how do we recapture that in Drybar? And, you know, I worked closely with our architect to figure out what that looked like, which is why, you know, the mirrors are behind the stations at Drybar.
Wow, I didn't even think about that, but that's genius. 'Cause
There's so many little things like that, you know, like even the tufted walls at Drybar, you know, those are there, you would think, because they look pretty, which they do, but they were also to absorb sound because we've been putting in so much noise with the blow dryers. And listen, this I didn't know that, but it just goes to show how if you have a really great architect and you know, and you partner up with really great people who are smarter than you know, which a lot of I think entrepreneurs make of like thinking they know everything and they can do everything. You know, that was a big thing that Josh, our architect, told us. You know, he's like, we need something to absorb all the sound that's going to be pumping into this place, you know. And so that's part of, that's why, you know, there's a lot, there's so many little things like that, you know, that are very purposeful, which is why it was hard for the competition to knock us off.
That's right. You have to keep up with competition or surpass them. So those were some hard years for you. The kids were very little. You were probably like giving it 200% of your energy and running around town in LA. So much stress, it sounds like. Once you and your husband was very closely involved at the time too, so it was really a family-run business.
I mean, you know, he was responsible for the branding of what you say, what everybody saw with Drybar. We used to always say that, you know, our I used to feel like the branding and the messaging is what got people in the door. And then it was my job to keep them there by giving them a great blowout, a great experience, great customer service. So it was such a dream team, the three of us, because my brother was more the business side of things, and he was dealing with like leases and negotiating contracts and all the bullshit I hate. And Cam was doing all the branding and collateral. And you know, my lane was hair and customer service and running the shop. And we were all so good at each of our things. If I didn't have Michael, Drybar probably would have never gotten his, without any of us, I don't think Drybar would have become what it did, which is, you know, also such a testament to having really great people, you know, partnered with you if you can.
And was there like a pivotal decision or time that you feel really changed the trajectory of Drybar?
I mean, I think that we were growing so fast for a couple of good couple of years, and we were like, you know, 5-year-olds playing soccer, like everybody kicking the ball, and it was a little bit of like mayhem, and the wheels were feeling like they were starting to come off. And our private equity group, we had raised about 26 million. It was our first big round with Castanea, which is now is Stride, but is a big private equity firm, and we didn't want to raise that much, by the way, but we landed on 26 million, and they were very, very bullish about us bringing in a professional CEO. And at the time, my brother was the CEO, and I thought that was great and fine, you know, but it, you know, would turn out to, much to my chagrin. And I was very bratty about bringing in a new CEO because I thought everything was going great, and I thought my brother was doing great, and I thought like an ivory tower CEO was going to ruin everything, and I was very wrong. And they brought us a handful of really great candidates, and one of them was John Hefner, who was our CEO for many years. He's now the CEO of Summer Fridays, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which is a, you know, a brand that's exploded, Marianna Hewitt and Lauren Ireland's brand that I love myself. And anyways, he's now there, but John came along and really had us pull back. You know, what we were opening stores so fast, and we, like I said, we didn't have systems in place. We were just, you know, running around with their heads cut off, and like it was a little bit nutty. And then John came in and was like, we need to stop opening stores and like get our shit together, and before we keep going, you know, it was like slow down to speed up, which I talk a lot about in the book, because you know, it was intoxicating and exciting, and we were on this rocket ship, and everybody wanted to drive bar everywhere we went, and we were like, okay, we'll keep opening them, you know. But we really needed help, and we needed systems, and we needed guidance, and we needed, you know, a lot. And we didn't even know what we needed, you know, until John came along and was like, let's slow down, let's regroup, let's hire the right people. And like, and that's what we did. And that was probably, I feel like that was in year 3 or 4 somewhere. And that's, you know, that year was a really great year because we were able to step back. I personally was able to take a break because I was going to every store opening, and reevaluate what we were doing and strategy and all that. And it was so great.
That's amazing. And then do you feel like in parallel there was a time in your personal life where you could take a step back, slow down, and then speed up? Or was
Well,
that
I mean,
the
I think I
problem
was,
that things kept rolling, and you didn't take that step back?
yeah, I didn't, you know, I was, I think camouflaging what was happening. You know, it was like I was avoiding, you know, what was there in my marriage. And, you know, Cam and I got married when I was like, I don't know, 26. I mean, and now that I'm 48, it's like, you're such a baby when you're 26. You don't think that when you're 26. Yeah. And, you know, I was really ready to like have babies. I really wanted kids so bad. And we had our first son, Grant, who's now 18, a year after we got married, and then Kit two and a half years after that. And then a year or so, you know, or so after that, we started Dry Bar. So it was like, boom, boom, boom. And I think I knew it wasn't right. And what I wanted at 26, and then what I, you know, when I get like 35 rolled around, I was like, huh, you know, I was like, I don't think this is right. And I think we both knew it, but we had made this commitment and felt, and I felt really strongly about that commitment. And I also did not really, I did not want to be divorced. Like I had a lot of shame around being divorced, and, you know, but it just became, it just hit me like a ton of bricks that like, I can't keep up this facade, and I owe it to myself to go and be happy. And, you know, my mom died when she was 65, and, you know, she's young, and my parents got divorced when she was in her 50s, and she never really found love again. And I was like, I don't want that to be my story, you know? And so I felt like I needed to like make a change in my life. And mm-hmm. it came at a very high price tag for all of us, but I ultimately think it was the right thing to do. Yeah, I mean, that was probably around year 7-ish of Dry Bar. And, you know, luckily at that point, we had built up the company so much. John was already in place. He had hired a big executive team. So we had so many people doing so much of the stuff that I had originally done. So it became a lot easier. It would be easier for me to like take the time and space that I needed, because I needed to step away and deal with what was happening in my life for me, the divorce. Yeah. And all of that. So yeah, it was a mess, you know, but it was just, you know, I think it was the result of like going for so long. And then finally, like,
finally you hit the wall. Yeah.
Can't run anymore, you know?
So, how many years ago was that divorce?
I guess like 6 years ago. We separated in 2018. What's the math on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now you feel more at ease with your decision, and looking back, it seems like it was all right. But in a way, your mom gave you the gift of like knowing that we're all mortal. I feel like once we turn 50, we really step into this understanding that there's not that many more years of life ahead. And like, if you're gonna squander it with someone else's definition of happiness, or trying to fit it in a box or it doesn't fit, what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting. And you know, I had an old friend say to me, like, you know, like you definitely like, you keep things interesting. And it's like, you know, I really struggled with like breaking the bond of the marriage and what that looked like. And then afterwards, like the, you know, becoming a single mom and like all the, it's, you know, it's like a lot of struggle, you know, and
yeah, so many defining things that we do as women that you feel like you have to hit these marks and get married at the right time, have kids at the right time, and like become a boss girl. And then what? And then finally you step back and you realize like, okay, I've done all the things. Am I really happy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's crazy. And then I'm sure there was a sense of like a little bit of betrayal too with the marriage breaking up. Like, it seems like he put so much creative energy into this combined project with you. Was that really hard to let go of your creative partner, or is he still a creative partner?
He was, but no, I mean, it didn't feel like betrayal. It was, you know, I think it was hard on all of us, but I think it was, and it took us some time, and really going through what we went through with Grant, our older son, and it like essentially forcing us to come back together for him and to pull together.
Yeah.
Well, it was really hard for us in the beginning. We ended up, you know, having to go to therapy sessions and just be like strong as a unit for him. And so I think it was, you know, in that way, in so many ways, I mean, what my son went through was really impossibly hard and awful, but on the other side of it, he's such an amazing kid, and he's like come so far, and he's I don't even regret any of it, even though if you had asked me that at the time, I would have said I wouldn't wish this on my worst nightmare, but on my worst enemy. But it really turned, it helped our whole family, you know, really rebound and get stronger and learn so much about ourselves. And it was a really beautiful thing. And so no, there's no ill will at all towards him. And, you know, we're very friendly today. You know, we've started other businesses like Squeeze, our massage concept. We've started that. And, you know, we have several projects that we work on together. And I mean, I'm going to Thanksgiving dinner at his house tomorrow.
Oh, great. It sounds like you've kind of come full circle and really like reintegrated your life in a better way that you wanted to find
yeah,
it. Yeah.
Totally.
So tell us, have you achieved the elusive balance? Is
so
life balanced now? You have all this effort.
The second chapter in my book is called Balance is Bullshit. So I don't really believe in it. And I think it's this facade of this, you know, to your point about the pressure of women and this this false sense of reality that we're all trying to get to of like, oh, there's balance in all of this. And there's just not, in my experience, you know, it's like one day things are great and you've got it all under control and you make it to the game and you do all the things. And then the next day you're like, shit, I totally feel like I'm failing as a parent. You know, it's so all over the place. And I think trying to achieve this, you know, unreachable reality or balance, as we call it, it just doesn't exist. You know, I so don't believe in it. I think it's, you know, striving, you know, if you think of, I think the way I think about it is like, you know, we can, how much of ourselves we want to give to all these other things in our life, like our family, our business, our, you know, ourselves. And like, at any given day, you're trying to split up those three things. How much of a percentage, what does that percentage look like? You know, and for me, it's like some days are really devoted to like taking care of myself and checking out, you know, and some days it's all really work and some days it's all really kids and family, you know, so it's just, it's all over the place. But I think if we let ourselves off the balance hook, we're all better for it, you know.
Are there certain things you're doing to try stay a little more grounded in this idea now? Like, do you have any, you know, personal?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've done all the things, you know, I do all the things from, you know, meditating to therapy to, you know, I take really good care of myself in terms of like, you know, getting massages and I have an infrared sauna and a cold plunge and, you know, and I try to like get off my phone by 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, I try to read really inspiring things. Like I'm really way more aware now than I've ever been about taking care of myself mentally and physically. You know, I think I always kind of took care of myself physically. I mean, in those first few years of Dry Bar, I don't think I did. I was like, I got to be in the office by 9. I had this unrealistic like thing that I needed to be in the office by 9. I was like, why does it matter if I'm in the office by 9? Finally occurred to me. Like, I want to go to the gym in the morning before, you know, I go to work after I drop off my kids. And, you know, finding what worked for me, you know, and like, I start most days out by walking for an hour, you know, and that's just very like healing for me. Like, I'm sometimes listening to music, sometimes I'm listening to a book, sometimes I'm writing while I'm walking, you know, whatever it is, that is like really sacred time for me. And yeah, every day I really try to like check a bunch of those boxes of things that I know are like good for my mind and my soul, you know? And then of course, like I went and got a massage at Squeeze last night and, you know, I'm coming to get microneedling with you. Like all that stuff is really, I really like that stuff too. I mean, I'm such a girly girl in that way, you know, that I love all the beauty treatments and all the things. And, you know, so I try to do it all.
Yeah. It's really taking time to invest in yourself. I think I have 4 kids and having had a busy career and now they're also almost fully grown. So taking the moment to step back, like you realize at some point that you don't even know, you haven't heard your own voice in your head for the last 10 years. Like, you know, you're so busy with children, business, everything. You finally take a breather and like, who am I again? And what am I thinking? What are my voices in my head? What do I want to do? And like, it takes a while to get that. Like those morning walks must be an amazing time for self-realization too.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I'm so grateful for the life that I have and the fact that I'm able to go and walk most mornings, you know. And it's funny, I was, you know, just on this big book tour whirlwind for the last 2 weeks, and it was like go, go, go. And I could feel it in my body, like how I was like, I feel like I worked out yesterday, but I didn't, you know. It's like my body was just so tense and tired. And now to be home, I'm like so appreciative to be back home in my space and walking and going in my sauna and sweating and working out, like all the things, you know. It's so sacred to do all that stuff for yourself. But it's also important and great to like go and do the other stuff and like, but then come back and like reset and recenter.
That's true. You're a very ambitious person because you don't stop. Like, in spite of you built all the entrepreneurship and then saw, had the messy truth revealed. And you're so ambitious to write a book and then do the book tour and really a hustler. That's impressive.
I'm very driven. And you know, it's interesting on this side of my life, you know, having sold Drybar and not doing that. And you know, then I spent the last 2 years working on this book, and now that's out there in the world, which feels so good. And actually, I found out today that it hit the USA Today bestseller list. That was amazing.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's such a huge accomplishment just getting the book out there. More the response that the book is getting and all the amazing notes I've gotten from women about how much it's helping them, and that's really means more than anything. But yeah, I just, you know, I'm just so naturally like driven to keep going and doing things. I'm also cognizant and feel incredibly lucky and grateful that I can do it at the pace that I want to do it at. Like I can be like, you know what? I'm not going to do anything for a couple weeks. I'm going to take some downtime. I mean, I won't take much, but you know, I'm definitely taking this week, you know, and then I have a handful of projects that I'll probably start back up next week. And in it, and I, but I, you know, I really take care of myself. And I've also really started to say no to a lot of things. Like I, you know, like even today, like I really wanted to come and get microneedling from your office, but I was like, I just can't make it all work if I go to, because you're farther away, too far. If you were in West Hollywood, it'd be a different story, you know. But like, I have to go get pies and I have to go do that, you know. It's like,
I know. Oh my God, I need to start a mobile service.
it's funny though, because it's like, okay, like I really wanted to go and do that, but I had to say no to that. And that's like, that's something that I'm getting better at, is saying, I just can't do it for my own mental sanity and like stress
Yeah.
level. And that's new for me.
That's learning how to not be a perfectionist, let go and be 80% good versus 100%, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Who are your role models? Like, are there some women you look towards who inspire you? When I scroll my Instagram, sometimes I'm seeing like, oh, beautiful influencer, beautiful this, beautiful, and it does not inspire. It makes me feel a little inadequate sometimes. But there are certain women that I see that I'm like, oh, I love her, I love her. Gotta see what she's up to today. Who are those people for you?
I totally agree. You know, I think that I'm the same way. There's a handful of accounts and just people that I follow that I really admire, and I stop and I read their stuff because I want to be, you know, inspired. And I am like Jenna Kutcher. I don't know if you follow her.
I love her, yeah.
I love her, and she's just got such a positive message. And it's been fun to like watch her journey with having children, and got such an inspiring story. You know, I'm also like a big fan of what Whitney Wolf has built at Bumble. You know,
Yes,
I've
huge.
been lucky enough to be friends with her and watch her and, you know, her journey and all the things that she's done. You know, I really love her. I'm also like really inspired by Oprah. I know that's such a cliche answer, but I love all of her stuff. I read all of her books. I'm so inspired by her. Brené Brown is another woman really inspired by, Gabby Bernstein. You know, gosh, there's, I'm sure I'm forgetting people. But you know, I mean, you said women, but I also really love Jay Shetty. Like I've really come to be inspired by him. Mel Robbins, like, you know, those are probably like a good handful of women that I'm really inspired by. But there's a lot, you know. And it's like, you know, my best friend Paige is, you know, I joke that I've been riding her spiritual coattails for a while. Like I'm really inspired by all that she does and all the work. And all that. So it's like, you know, she's not well known to the world, but to really inspiring to me. So it's, you know, it's all over the place.
Yeah, that's so important to have those people that they, all of those people, they just make you stop and think a little bit about this life that we're running on a busy treadmill, and they just take you off the treadmill and make you stop and think about your choices and what you're surrounding yourself with. So critical. I think one of the things that I love about you and your book is the messy truth has so much transparency. Like, I'm in a field where, you know, people like J-Lo say they apply olive oil and it makes them look so youthful. And then there's no transparency there. And again, that makes women feel inadequate about their own lives, because all the times we see these amazing entrepreneurs that have got everything held together perfect and living these dream lives. And, you know, you kind of show us that transparency. That
case. And you know, I've been really transparent with stuff like that too. Like, I get Botox, I get, you know, I haven't really done filler, but I've gotten Botox. And I also did like a lid lift a couple of years, like last year, which was amazing, you know, and like, I've done a handful of things, and I talk about them, you know, in a town where women, I think, do way too much to themselves, yeah. Not all, but some, and you're like, and it's a slippery slope that I'm very aware of, you know, that I don't want to do too many things to myself, because I want to grow old gracefully. But I also believe in, like, you know, if like, you would never have known, well, you might've known, but most people would never have known that I had a lash lift in a lid lift, because it was just, I had a very heavy, you know, eyelid, and it made my eyes pop up a little more, and it was very subtle. Nobody would have known if I didn't, you know what I mean? But it was like, yeah, one of those things that just made me feel better. And I think that, I mean, to each their own, but I feel like those little things that we do, which really made such a big difference. I mean, you can tell, you can't really tell, you'll see me in person at some point, how small my eyes are, but it made such a big difference, you know, and I'm all for things like that, that, you know, enhance us a little and make us feel a little better without completely changing the way we look, you know?
Yeah,
so, I mean, listen, I'd like to have less wrinkles around my eyes, but like, that's just not happening, you know, and that's okay. Unless you can do that.
I will come up with some magic for that. Maybe some collagen stimulators, but I agree with you. I think, you know, to your point of having the mirror behind you and enjoying the life in front of you, like, people spend a lot of time breaking down, criticizing and analyzing their faces. And like,
and that's exactly
why.
Look
in the mirror less, you know, a little bit. Because,
and we do that, you know, and I think there's like, I believe that there's like, sometimes when you're not feeling great and you like need to like see a mirror so you can check in and be like, oh no, I look good. I feel good. I'm good. You know, but that was a huge part of it. Like, staring at yourself in a mirror for 45 minutes, like, yeah, your hair is wet. Like, no thanks. Like, we start like, and also it's like, mirrors are so fucked up because,
yes,
you know, it's like some mirrors you look like, what the fuck with skinny mirrors? Like, I don't understand. Like, why do some mirrors make me look so skinny and some mirrors make you look very different? I'm like, what's real? You know? Sorry. I just always feel like that. Cause I have a friend who has a skinny mirror at their house. And I'm like, I love this mirror, but the mirror is not true. Or maybe the mirror I have at my house is not true. Which is it? You know, it's like,
yeah, a little bit or maybe we need to have a skinny filtering mirror when we put on our face in the morning to go out and feel so like we look amazing. Like, who cares what you really look like? It's what you project of how you feel that morning. So maybe we need that mirror that tricks us into feeling like I look like a millionaire.
As a disclaimer, you know, it's like, you know, I'm careful to say like, oh, a skinny mirror makes me feel good, so I feel skinny, because I think that there's, you know, all different degrees of beauty. You know, for me, I feel really good when I'm at a certain weight, and sometimes I get too skinny and it doesn't look good. And sometimes I go the other way and it doesn't look good. It's to me, you know, and I think it's so particular on the person. So,
yeah,
you know, I kind of think at this point I strive for like healthy, you know, versus like skinny, which is like what my trainer always says when I use the word skinny. He's like, we're not going to use that word. I'm like, okay, I know, you're right. You know? And he's right.
Yeah. Toned and fit and like just feeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. And then, talk a little bit about hair and just like a lot of time, so much hair thinning is going on with COVID. Everybody has shed so much hair. There's so much hair fall, hair loss, thinning. and so much overuse of extensions and things. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because I kind of feel like the smoke and mirrors of beautiful hair extensions look great, and we all feel jealous of ladies that have these amazing locks, and they come in, and then I see them up close and I notice that they're like all full of extensions, and it can't be good long term. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
No, I don't think there's a lot of things. I mean, I can't speak to like what COVID's been doing, although I know it is true that it has changed people's hair. And I think just aging, as we age, our hair changes. And my hair is so much thinner than it used to be when I was younger. But, you know, for me, I hate to say this, but I don't blow dry my hair as much as I used to, and I don't bleach it like I used to. And that was just a big thing for me in my hair growing. And I have, you know, like I put serum in my hair on my ends every night, so my hair doesn't get too dry, because when hair gets dry and brittle, it breaks, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are just some like basic surface things that I always tell people to do. But also, like, there's a lot of, certainly extensions are tricky, because certain kinds of extensions, and if you're not taking really good care of them, it can really pull out hair. To your point, I've seen a lot of like bald spots around where extensions go in, and it's tricky. You know, I've had them before too, and I felt like my hair did grow a little when I had extensions, and I was pretty like, you know, once they started to grow out even a little, I wanted to get them redone because I didn't want them pulling up my hair, because I was afraid of breakage and all of that. But also there's things like, you know, it's pretty fascinating when you get into the science of hair, and you probably know a lot about this, like how a damaged follicle won't grow. And sometimes that's because you're putting a shit ton of dry shampoo in your hair, or when you're washing your hair, you're not cleaning it well enough. And so those follicles get clogged. I believe it's similar to like, is it, you know, it's like you get clogged and then I think over time that can be really harmful and dangerous, which is why so many hair brands are doing like so many different scalp treatments, you know, and mm-hmm. there's a handful of, it hasn't really taken off, although I think it should. There's a handful of places that are like hair, like scalp massage, like services where you go in and you get your scalp cleansed, and it's like an oil that's, I've done it once. There's a local girl here that does it. It's not like a thing. And I think it should be, because it's like such a great way to clean your scalp. And she'll show you with like a camera, your scalp. Trippy. I'm sure you've done all this stuff. You know, you can
see. No, but I want to go. I heard of like an Asian spa where they do like
They show you your scalp and what's happening with your scalp. And it's, you know, it's a really good way to see and like be like, oh, I need to be doing like some sort of scalp scrub once a week, because my scalp has a lot of buildup, and all that buildup will cause your hair not to grow, you know. So, and again, not a scientist, but that's what I put together over years of, you know, looking at hair. Mm-hmm. But again, I just, you know, my hair is longer and healthier than it's been in a long time, mm-hmm. which is because I don't blow dry it and bleach it as much as I used to. So, and I might be working on something in this area.
I was just saying, this sounds like you need to make this as the next dry bar. It's going to be like scalp massage, microcirculation, microneedling of the scalp, which we do that with.
I think there's something there for sure.
Oh, I think so. And plus the relaxation element, like the scalp massage. The Ayurvedic. Yes.
But the woman I went to, I mean, it was like an hour, and then she blew out my hair after, and I was like, this is heaven. You know, having someone like play with your head for an hour is like, it was such a great thing. And it's just hasn't hit mainstream, and it will.
You don't realize how much tension you store in the muscles of the face and scalp and neck, and actually it's so healthy.
It's so true. I mentioned I do a lot of meditation, and one of the things, like so many of the meditation apps, I use an app called Insight Timer, and they'll say, relax your jaw. And I'm like, I do need to relax my jaw. You know, it's crazy. Like you don't think about it. We don't think about it. You know, and I have this friend, Julie, I don't know how you say her last name, Polirio. She does like, you know, kind of shows you all these different things you can do on your face to like, relax, and how it affects like other parts of your body. It's like all that stuff's so fascinating to me.
So interesting. Okay, well, I'm coming in on that next investment. I'll help you with the microneedling, the stem cell growth factors.
Right, we have camera here, so I'm gonna
And
hold you
now
to
that you know that we just started doing follicular stem cell hair harvesting. So you harvest 50 hair follicles with the live bulb on them, and those are cryopreserved, and they have stem cells from every layer, from epithelial, mesenchymal, pluripotent, so they can be frozen. And at some point in the future, when the technology's there, you'll have your own little bank of stem cells, which you can regrow tissues everywhere, all over. It's amazing.
you
So,
regrow your hair?
well, to theoretically, that day is coming, not yet, but for now, you can grow with your own skin cells, make your own stem cell growth factor, like your exosomes and things that someday we'll be able to inject. Maybe in the next year or two, we're going to see that kind of progress. But already, so we're banking and harvesting those hair follicles. So maybe
Yeah.
when you come, we should do that. That
I
would
would
be
love to. I'm
yeah.
going to spend all day at the office.
Stay with K-Day. Awesome. Well, you're so inspiring and so creative. I'm really impressed with how your mind works. It's kind of amazing.
It's hard to get there sometimes, but thank you.
And thank you for the gift of writing this book to show all of us working women out there, every person out there, that life is messy. And
That's
that,
right.
and actually, the beauty of it is discussing it and knowing that and learning it. And I think that's such a bold and brave step. A lot of entrepreneurs write their biography and they're writing like all the glossy points. But yeah, I'm sure you've received so much good feedback from ladies.
It's been so humbling and amazing and really makes my day and makes me feel so grateful and happy and yeah, it's amazing.
Well, I hope you hit the New York Times bestseller list. I'm sure you will with
Fingers
this
crossed.
book tour. Where can everybody find you on your social handles?
I'm just Ally Webb. It's Alliwebb, and that's really the best place to find all my stuff.
And The Messy Truth is available everywhere books are sold, right?
Yes, and on Audible as well. So you can listen to it. And I read it.
Exactly. Oh, you're reading it with your voice. Okay, I'm gonna get that because I love hearing you talk, and it'll be like a further
Okay.
conversation.
Yeah, you'll feel like we're best friends after.
Amazing.
I don't hold back, that's for sure.
Well, guys, thanks so much for listening in to the beautiful and talented Allie Webb. You must read The Messy Truth. It's out there, and it's such an important message to all of us working hard that life is ups and downs, and you can balance it. You can't balance it. Actually, balance is bullshit,
Thank you.
but the messy truth is real. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay, and our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find my stem cell growth factor serum. It's so amazing. I'm gonna have to send you some to try. And I
Love
can't
it.
wait to see you for some microneedling and scalp
Yes.
discussions.
Next week, hopefully.
That's
All
it
right.
for now, guys. Stay beautiful.